Okay, Shalom, Shalom. We are in Parshas Yisroi, Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Beis. We discussed yesterday how Kol Yisroel, we discussed how Kol Yisroel arrived at Har Sinai in the perfect state for Kabbalah Sotera, having met the three main conditions, as the Arachaim noted in this Pasuk Beis. A, they were there with a spirit of vigor and enthusiasm, ready to apply themselves vigorously. B, they were in a state of humility, ready for the Shekhinah to just rest on them, not puffing themselves up at all, which would disrupt the Shekhinah from resting on them. And number three, it was with absolute achdus. The more of a unified Klal Yisrael there is, the more settled the Shekhinah will be upon them. And Torah is Shekhinah. So now, I just want to add to this a dimension that the Kli Yakar brings us across so beautifully. He says, how did that happen, that all of a sudden they came there, and they were suddenly in a state of humility and absolute achdus? Like, well, what happened? How'd this happen? So he says, it was natural. When they arrived at Midbar Sinai, as we'll see soon, even though we're told that the Shekhinah really came down, that Hashem really came down, so to speak, on the Har Sinai, at Matan Torah itself, the sixth day, and Vav Nisan, when they actually received the Torah, there was already a presence on the mountain from the beginning. From Rosh Chodesh Nisan, as we're going to see, there was back and forth between Moshe and Hashem going on throughout these 3 days. Just there was a certain level of Hashras HaShekhinah, and it reached a climax, an infinitely greater climax, when Hashem actually opened up all of the seven heavens and appeared in His full glory on Har Sinai. But before that, there was more of a faint revelation that was already there. But you know what? That faint revelation was already something immense. It was already something very, very big. We have to appreciate Nevuah, the experience of prophecy, which really means the experience of actually being exposed to Hashem, is an extremely overwhelming experience. The Rambam describes it, the Kuzari describes it. They say when a person experiences Nevuah, he's a changed person for the rest of his life. He loses any interest. He loses interest in material pursuits because he's already really basically been exposed to Olam Haba. Now, being exposed to the Shekhinah was already a certain level of that. They were being exposed to something very, very great. And basically, what happened was, if you stand by yourself, you know, you can feel pretty big. But when you're actually exposed to the immensity of what the Shekhinah is, and when you look up at the immense universe, and you realize that this is just a small creation of Hashem, and you sometimes stand in a place when you're in a high place late at night, the sky's empty, and you just see the vast expanse of the universe. Or when you're standing at the ocean where you have a very, very good view of the horizon, and you see the vastness of the ocean, and you feel small. When you're actually being exposed to the Shekhinah in the intense way that Hashem was showing it to the Jewish people, it was something so vast, so immense, that people felt tiny. They automatically felt tiny. And therefore, the humility was almost like automatic. It wasn't a process. This was the reward for the efforts they'd been making in the weeks leading up to this, but it wasn't necessarily the result of a process. The humility came automatically by being exposed to the immensity of the Shekhinah. But then there was also something more than that. When they saw the glory of Hashem, when they saw the grandeur of Hashem, and they understood that they could be a part of this, so every person felt like he was connecting to something so much bigger than himself. His sense of self was expanding immensely. And any personal petty agendas that he might have had just paled in comparison. All he wanted was to be a part of this, to be a part of the Shekhinah, to be bound up with Hashem, to be a part of Hashem's agenda in this world, to be part of something immense, of something eternal. Now, if we understand this, and we understand that any like personal agendas, desires, etc., just kind of shriveled up in the face of that grandeur, so you also understand that Achdus as well was a natural consequence. Because what creates a lack of Achdus? What creates separation? I have my agenda, you have your agenda, and there's conflict. Or your presence is threatening to me. I like to think that I'm the greatest person around. Or however else it will manifest itself. But when they saw clearly how small they were, and when they all felt this overwhelming desire to just connect to the grandeur of what they were seeing, and this was all they wanted, just to further Hashem's agenda, all barriers fell away. They were all in the same place, especially since part of what they saw was Hashem's very great value for the next Jew, for me and for the next Jew. I looked at the Jews around me with a new respect, and therefore, once again, any walls, any barriers just simply fell away, and now the Jewish people are united in this enthusiastic desire to connect to Hashem, to become a part of his agenda. And any personal agendas fell away, the humility came there, and also any personal agendas will create conflicts fell away. We're all just unified in this desire to connect to Hashem, to all together further his agenda, be a part of him and of his program for history. So therefore, yeah, this sense of vigor was natural, the sense of humility was natural, and also the sense of achdus was natural. These were all natural results of what they were being exposed to. Now, we move on to the next pasuk. So they all arrived there. Umayshe ala el elikim. And Moshe ascended to Hashem, meaning immediately they arrived. Exactly, it was this mamish the first day, the second day. Okay. Rashi says it was actually on the following morning. Whatever the case is, Moshe heads up. Before anything actually starts happening, Moshe heads up toward Hashem. Vayikra elav Hashem minahar lemor. And Hashem called to him from the mountain, saying, and we're going to see what Hashem said, but here is where the process begins of a give and take between Moshe, Hashem, and the Jewish people that spreads over a couple of days until it actually culminates with Matan Torah itself. But what happens? The first thing that happens is Moshe goes up to Hashem. Moshe approaches Hashem. So the Aruch Chaim says something here that really gives, in general, this is something we're going to be seeing throughout the Perek, and it gives us insight into Moshe's role. The Aruch Chaim says that Moshe went to Hashem because Moshe had initially been told that this is the place where Hashem is going to connect with the Jewish people. He had been told back, remember, before he approached the Jewish people in the first place, he was out shepherding his sheep here in Midbar Sinai. And Hashem appeared to him here. And Hashem told him that ultimately when I redeem my people, you will worship Hashem in this place. So now we're coming to the place, Moshe felt that it was inappropriate if he's here now to just get busy with mundane things. He knows that this is where Hashem is going to be connecting, so he felt behooved. He felt that it was imperative on him to immediately go and approach Hashem and say, okay, Hashem, what's the story? What do you expect of us? He felt that it would be inappropriate to, so to speak, leave Hashem waiting on a mountain while he goes and sets up his tent or whatever it is. If you remember, we saw back in the beginning of the parsha that it was almost like Hashem was waiting at Har Sinai for the Jewish people to arrive at the beginning of time. So therefore, Moshe felt it his duty to immediately report. To immediately report to Hashem, say, I'm here, I'm ready, I'm at your disposal. I don't need to set anything up. There's no preliminaries. We arrived, I'm here. Hashem, hineini. So there is insight here, which we'll be seeing, as I said, throughout the parasha. Moshe Rabbeinu, Chazal tell us about, when they talk about Matan Torah, they tell us how different things of it that reflect the greatness of the giver, Hashem, the greatness of the receiver, that's the Jewish people, and the greatness of the middleman, Moshe Rabbeinu. The role of Moshe Rabbeinu sometimes gets lost because he was so transparent. His essence was simply reflecting Hashem. And everything about him was just being the medium of Hashem to the Jewish people, that we often lose sight of Moshe himself. And it's almost like, you know, it could have been anybody. He was just simply giving over what Hashem was saying. Why was it just coincidental? Okay, I had to be a great person because otherwise, you know, it's not fitting that Hashem should use him. But where was there effort? Was there avoida on Moshe's part in this whole reality of Moshe acting as the sarsur, acting as the middleman between Hashem and the Jewish people? So there was. There was a lot of avoida. We're not even going to get into the main part of it now. Understanding Moshe's transparency is to understand his life's project, his greatness, his claim to fame. He made himself transparent. Not everybody could be transparent like him. Most people, if they'd be in that position, so there would be a lot of themselves reflected. You wouldn't be capable. You have to be on a very high level to simply be able to convey Hashem's messages in their absolute purity in a way that reflects exactly the way Hashem said it. It's to such an extent that the Rambam says, this is something fascinating. The Rambam says that what was the chet of Moshe Rabbeinu when he hit the rock? There's a lot of discussion among the Mefarshim there. We all understand, we know what Rashi says, that he hit the rock instead of speaking to him. But it's not clear in the Pasuk exactly what the sin was. We know that in an earlier instance, he was told to hit the rock. Some Mefarshim say it was self-understood he was supposed to hit the rock here also. And different Mefarshim give different understandings of exactly what the chet was. The Rambam says something fascinating. A number of Mefarshim point to the fact that Moshe grew angry at the Jewish people then. He expressed himself angrily to the Jewish people. He said, Shimona ha-moyrim, listen, you rebellious ones. And then he struck the rock. So a number of Mefarshim say that the problem was in his anger. Now the Rambam goes with this, but in a much more refined way. And he says like this, this is mamash amazing. He says that Moshe Rabbeinu served as such a conduit of Hashem's messages to the Jewish people, not just in giving over Hashem's words. When Hashem came and said, say this and this and this, and he came and he said this and this and this, which it seems that anybody could do. But the Rambam says that he was such a representative of Hashem to the Jewish people that the people looked at Moshe, anything he did, they saw as reflective of Hashem. If they saw Moshe looking pleased, they understood that means that Hashem was now pleased with them. If they saw Moshe looking slightly irritated, they took that as a sign that Hashem was not so happy right now. Moshe was so in tune with Hashem, and even, so to speak, his moods and his facial impressions were so aligned with Ratzon Hashem that they just reflected Hashem, and people grew to use, even without talking to Moshe, without hearing him talk, they looked at Moshe to gauge where they stood with Hashem, to understand Ratzon Hashem in subtle ways. And therefore, the Rambam says that what happened there was, it's not merely the fact that he got angry. He says this was a sole instance where Moshe actually expressed something that was not actually reflective of Hashem. You know, imagine what this means. This is the sin of a person, that he one time expressed himself in a way that wasn't an accurate reflection of what Hashem was actually, where Hashem was actually at that moment. But this was the point. He expressed anger when Hashem actually was not angry. He didn't even say he was doing it in Hashem's name. He just expressed anger, a mild level of anger. Shimon ha-moyrim, listen, you rebellious ones. But there was a certain displeasure that he expressed that actually was not reflective of where Hashem was at that moment, and that already was a drop on Moshe's level. For him, that was considered a chet. We start getting a bit of an inkling of what it means when we say that Moshe served as a transparent conveyor of the word of Hashem. It's so much more than just the words themselves. It's Moshe acting as a reflector of Hashem for those 40 years in the Midbar, for the entire Jewish people, with every one of his moves. That's big. It goes to the extent that Reb Chaim Volozhiner says that Moshe Rabbeinu, if you remember, by the Parsha of Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "What are we? Anachnu ma? What are we? You have complaints against me? What are we?" says me and Aaron. It's all just Hashem. So the Nefesh HaChaim says something very interesting. He says, when Moshe said, "What are we?" is a humorous story that's told. A humorous story that's told kind of as a joke. You know, a new bachur came into a big Musar yeshiva, and a big prestigious Musar yeshiva, and they were all sitting and learning Musar, and he wasn't sure exactly about how things work in the yeshiva. So he sat down on the bench next to one of the more veteran talmidim of the yeshiva, and here's this person is shuckling back and forth and saying, I'm a nobody, I'm mamish a nobody. So you got the idea, this is what you do here in this yeshiva. So he also started chuckling and saying, I'm a nobody, I'm mamish a nobody. So the veteran boy turned to him with a certain disdain and said, "Who do you think you are? You just arrived here this minute and already you're a nobody?" So that's a humorous little anecdote that they say, but you know what? Chaim Volozhiner says this in a very serious way about Moshe Rabbeinu. He says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came and said, "What are we?" that was actually an accurate description of his sublime level. He reached a place where he was nothing. And he brings Chazal, who say that David HaMelech reached a certain level of anava, which was expressed when he said, "I am a worm, not a person." Avraham Avinu reached an even greater level of anava when he said, "Anochi Ofer Ve'efer, I'm just dust and ashes." He says that none of them actually reached the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, "Nachnu ma, what are we? There's nothing here." So Chaim Volozhiner goes on and says, and you know what? Only Moshe really reached the level of "there's nothing here." When he said, "Nachnu ma, what are we?" including Aaron also, Chaim Volozhiner says, it was only to show honor for Aaron that he included him in that very great title of, "I'm nothing and Aaron is nothing also." But it wasn't actually true, he says. Moshe was saying it out of respect for Aaron. But really, only Moshe reached that real level of being nothing. It's reaching the level of being nothing but a reflection of Hashem. There's no Moshe here at all. All you see here is Hashem shining through. It's a reflection of Hashem. This is the part of the understanding of Moshe's role as the middleman between Klal Yisrael and Hashem was so much more than just relaying words. It had to be something that completely dominated every fiber of who Moshe was. This is really the bigger picture when we're talking about Moshe's role. But here in our parsha, we come to another point of it, another element of it. And that is that the process of Matan Torah, the process of Kabbalah Torah, it wasn't just that, okay, Hashem is going to give the Torah. That's a very, very clear, distinct program. He's going to give it. Torah is what it is. Hashem is going to give it. The Jewish people will have it. No. The giving of the Torah, even with what the 613 mitzvahs, we know that the experience of Matan Torah wasn't just getting the instructions. The experience of Matan Torah was something of such great magnitude that it really set the Jewish people on fire. The impact of Matan Torah carries over until this very day. It was something that catapulted the Jewish people to a completely different plane, having experienced everything that they saw at Matan Torah, the revelation, the unequaled revelation there at Har Sinai. So it wasn't just about, are they going to get a Torah or not going to get a Torah? It was about the level of experience, the level of revelation. And that could have been to very many degrees. Moshe was in that very, very high-stakes spot of navigating it, of being bringing Klal Yisrael to a place and conducting the process in a place that the revelation would be at its highest. It could have been, the intensity of it could have been at a number of different levels. And let's say Klal Yisrael wouldn't have reacted to everything right, wouldn't have brought themselves to the right level. There would have been Matan Torah, but perhaps at a lower level of intensity that wouldn't have brought them to the same place, wouldn't have set them off on their historic road in the optimal way. We're going to see throughout the parasha Moshe's intense efforts to get it exactly right, to have the whole setup so that the experience will be the maximum it could possibly be, that they will bring about, they'll earn the most intense, highest level of revelation, of Ashras Hashchina, of connecting with Hashem in a way that will turn Klal Yisrael, this is a fledgling Klal Yisrael, first being plugged in now to their historic role. It would be a Klal Yisrael of a higher level, being set off in a much higher place. So this is what we'll be seeing throughout the parasha. We'll see how this manifested in the example here in this pasuk. But okay, we'll end here for tonight.